Hey friend, I'm Tanisha Sela, and you're listening to the Life of an Empath podcast. I'm an empath, Akashic Records reader, and intuitive guide. I'm exactly what you would expect a modern day mystic to be. I meditate, I'm a crystal lover, sporadic yogi, and I believe in love and universal goodness. I help high-level creatives, empaths, and teams achieve emotional clarity and allow them to utilize intuition as business strategy. On this podcast, I share stories about my personal spiritual journey, the lessons that I'm learning through my clients, and life as a wife and mom of two toddlers. Welcome to my life. Let's get started. On today's episode, we have Mandy Bynum of Mandy Bynum Consulting, a tech leader turned head of diversity, of equity, and inclusion, and now running her own DE&I strategy and consulting firm. Her life's work is centered on being a champion of marginalized voices and a challenger to traditional business solutions. She believes that by educating and equipping leaders to see the value and importance of other voices, we begin to make a hugely impactful change in a real way. Mandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show because I feel like DE&I is so important at this critical time that we're having in our country's history. So tell us, what is DE&I and where are we in the state of it, the history, the current state, and what are its flaws? Tell us all about it.
Oh my gosh, where to start? So I guess to define three terms I think is important first, because our practice, we are called so many different things, from head of belonging to head of inclusion to head of D&I, and we all are essentially doing the same thing, which is trying to create more equitable workplaces for all employees, especially those who are marginalized. So diversity is like if you were to hold a writer summit, and at this writer summit, you would want to have diverse writers. So you invite poets, you invite novelists, you invite nonfiction writers. That's diversity. That's having different voices in the room. Inclusion is then making sure that all of those different types of writers, that their opinions, that their backgrounds are incorporated into this writing summit, so that best writing permit it possibly be, with equal representation of all voices. Now, equity is an interesting one because it's not just about stock. A lot of times people get that used. It is the leveling of the playing field for everyone at, example, Writer Summit. So if you have poets who maybe can't afford to make the summit in real life, they have scholarships provided for them at no question. Everyone has a level playing field when it comes to getting to this Writer Summit, the resources they have at the Writing Summit, and what they're getting out of the Writing Summit. That's typically how I explain it to beginners, the Writing Summit example, because people usually relate to having that extra education, but not everyone has to do things like that. And so what we do at work is I equate us to COOs. We run our own P&L. We run our own operation. We touch every single part of the business, and we have questioned every single part of the business. So not only do we have to create relationships across business functions, we also need to have all those business functions working well together so that magical things like extra budget for an employee resource group or extra budget to send an entire employee resource group to a particular conference, so that things like that can happen. Because as a head of diversity and inclusion, you typically have very little budget, very small team, and you may or may not be reporting to someone who has, you know, an equally small budget amount of power for a team. And so it's, we are project managers, we are thought leaders, we are, you know, CEO whisperers, we are magical influencers. And we use the human experience to create a better workplace for everyone involved. And then we tie that all back to what's in it for stakeholders.
That's a really good example. I love the Writer Summit. It makes it very simple, very clear. But you brought up a good point about who you're reporting to. Who should DE&I report to?
If this role is done right, they have to report to the chief executive officer. The chief executive officer is, at the end of the day, the voice of the company in every context. The chief executive officer is also the person from whom all of the statements are coming from, especially at times like this. So if that person doesn't have a direct line and consistent interaction with the person who is the thought leader, who is the project manager, who is constantly thinking about all of these things that they may not have visibility into, there will ultimately be a disconnect. And if you're working, if you're the second place that this role is typically reported to is under HR. Mm-hmm. Well, HR is fantastic. They are amazing partners. HR is HR, and that is, they are founded in compliance, founded in employee relations, founded in under the law, and they should not be competitors. They should be working together, because a lot of the things that make, a lot of the circumstances that make a company a great place to work is that of the people team. However, the CEO is the person who needs to have the tone and hold people accountable to do the things that will create a more equitable workplace. And oftentimes, HR isn't able to do that alone. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like this whole dynamic here is a part of its flaws. What else is missing in the current practices, would you say, in your experience?
My peers are the most brilliant people I've ever met. Not only are they able to be extremely creative and agile with the resources that they do have to drive really impactful change, mm-hmm. They also have the duality of being able to, on one end, like really uplift and pat the back on the majority white leaders, mm-hmm. and also create platforms, create resources for people who are typically marginalized, and be able to both speak negatively about the other and also support the other when they're in respective places. And it's a constant struggle. And I think that's a lot of the times why people in this role have a tough time, is because there's that constant mental calculus of, I am here, my soul is here to serve people who are in my community, who are probably marginalized, who haven't had these types of opportunities. But the only way to really do that is to do certain things that might make me feel as if I'm an ethical sellout, mm-hmm. so that I can get the resources for those folks. So what I think is often missing is that these folks in my position don't have the budget. They don't have the same budget that a COO would, even though their remit is almost the same. They don't have the team size within each of the units of business to be able to really make that impactful change other than like through thought leadership. Mm-hmm. And so when we do see that happen, we do see a larger team, and we do see a team with more budget. They are able to get more things done through systems and programs that can, that people can hold themselves accountable for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like budgeting kind of throws it all off balance, and it makes it complicated, more complicated than it needs to be based on the nature of the work that you're actually trying to do. But do you think that even when you have budget and when everything is seemingly like a level playing field, do you still think there are things that are off balance? Like what really gets in the way when there is plenty of budget, when there is everything that you need to be effective technically?
Ego.
So the root cause of the incongruity is the ego. And how do we fix that?
That's a tough one. I have this conversation a lot with my peers. When a CEO, I'll refer to them as CBO from here on out, just like CBO. When a CBO has quote unquote made it, they are reporting directly to a CEO. They're probably making a good amount of money to the point where they can be seen as really a figurehead. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, and there for photo op. Mm-hmm. But the course in which they took to get to where they are is extremely complex and extremely complicated. And so it's hard because they have to be at all these appearances to essentially continue the branding for the company to say that we are diverse and these are all the things that we're doing to be a diverse company. Yet there are still multiple times a year when you are having to sell your strategy to the CEO, who is either too scared, who doesn't really know the purpose of this and how it's going to quote unquote make the company more diverse. Mm-hmm. And so it's this constant battle between, like, I have to, again, going back to like who you're serving. At the end of the day, the person who's paying you is the CEO, who lacks the knowledge and literacy around this topic. And so they're asking you to do things, a lot of things for them, that they're not able to do. And so you end up appearing as if you're just showing up to show up, which stinks at the end of the day, because the work that we really want to do is helping our own communities. So what ends up happening when it comes to ego is that we get to a place where we're making enough money. And so we can kind of kick back. A lot of people do kick back and say, like, I've made it. I'm in business. I have a team. But the work that we're actually doing is so impactful and so meaningful that it's really hard to feel that you can just kick back when this work is so important. Mm-hmm. But with money and power comes more ego. And so it's a lot harder than it looks to keep in check.
Absolutely. You know, I think that one of the deeper shortcomings with DE&I stems from the fact that people do need more diverse companies, but then find themselves needing to be told this.
Right.
What is that about? Like, in your opinion, what role does organizational structure play in creating the unbalanced paradigm for change?
I'll use the example of Barack Obama. So when Barack Obama was elected president, we started hearing terms like post-racial society, post-racial this, blah, 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 as if all race had just disappeared all of a sudden with the election of a president. with CDOs, that can often be the thing. It's like, we have hired this person who's going to fix everything for us. We're not going to pay them that much. You don't know that though. And well, they're going to have the job of really what 8 other people would be doing, but you know, they're from the community. They're going to fix everything. And this is wildly problematic because you're giving that person a great title, but you're not giving them enough room and space to really influence you as the leader and also influence other business units. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of is its own self-fulfilling prophecy of like, you're hiring someone to do the work, yet it's kind of like hiring a personal trainer. If you hire a personal trainer, but then you don't show up for the trainings, then you're not going to get any fitter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of leaders don't understand that, like, they themselves play a huge part in the perpetuation of racism and perpetuation of white supremacy.
Right.
And if they're not willing to take the time and do the work, then it's kind of all for naught. And it does become that photo op.
Exactly. You know, I've always personally viewed DE&I as complicated and have always thought that accountability, as you mentioned, is fundamental and currently the missing puzzle piece in diversity work in general. What role do you think emotional clarity and organizational level intuitive coaching could improve here, if anything? Mm-hmm. I just wonder, like, you know, If there was a pathway for change and it was not just about budgets, like, so if ego is really the problem here, like, what role could emotional clarity for that CEO, for that C-suite team that needs to almost be convinced of the fact that they need DE&I, even though they have it already, like, at the organizational level, like, how do you think maybe more intuitive coaching where you're really looking into that and you're the person that doesn't work under them and can say, hey, you know, I feel like you're understanding what's going on, but there is a little pride that's showing here. Or I feel like, you know, there's a little bit of anger when, you know, you hear from DE&I when it comes to this thing specifically. Like, how do you think that could influence things in a positive way, if at all?
Yes. I don't know what I was going to say now. So this is all rooted in whiteness and in white supremacy. And I will start by saying that just those combination of words are extremely scary and off-putting for a lot of white leaders, because it sounds like you're implying that they are racist, that they are white supremacists, that they are part of the KKK, which is absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. We simply live in a society that is deeply rooted for centuries and generations of a culture that has happened to have stemmed from Northern Europe. So when it comes to any way we act in our society, it is ultimately rooted in that. So when it comes to things like vulnerability or being open to new ideas, the white culture is not typically about that. It's often a showcase of strength, a showcase of I have the right answers, a showcase of individuality. Mm-hmm. When in reality, no one in our society has gotten to where they are alone. Mm-hmm. And I think, however, a lot of our leaders, all of the evidence shows that they have gotten to where they are alone. They were the smart ones. They were the ones promoted to the next level. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who made that one investment in that one company. Mm-hmm. So doing the work to peel that back is really hard because all of these signs, the external signs are showing you that you're the one, that you are the individual. And there's a lot of guilt, shame, embarrassment, and anger ultimately around peeling that back when it's quite the opposite. It's quite freeing. And once you do pull back your own fears and anger and start to really raise your own awareness of what's happening to your company as a leader and understanding the human experiences, you can really get a better idea of what direction your business should be going in. When you're not only thinking about stakeholders and people who are investing dollars into your business, you're thinking about the society that, or the community that your business serves. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of shifting how you look at your business, shifting how you think about who you serve as a leader, and then understanding that you ultimately play a part in white supremacy, and it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's definitely a very interesting perspective because I feel like with the people that I work with, I feel like everybody is defensive when it comes to emotional work in general, like in the beginning. But what I find that is when you come to it and you know that you're in a non-judgmental space and you can say whatever you want to say, and also someone can look at you or hear your voice and call out exactly what you feel and put language to it, then that in itself is freeing so that you don't have to feel like you have to hide behind the mask because somebody's already ripped it off your face. So you might as well just go ahead and be honest and give a moment for moving forward. But however, you're right in that we do live in America, which was founded on all of these things. And there is a lot of individual perspectives and just people making decisions and taking certain actions in solitude that do lead to crazy manifestations of their ego. And so here we are. But we are in a time of great transformation and more attention being drawn to the state of Black Lives in America. How would you rate the organizational response to Black Lives Matter? And do you think that DE&I departments have actually been involved in crafting these PR statements? How is that going to move us forward, if at all?
Yeah. You know, as practitioners in this space, we are under our own organization, and it often keeps us from being able to collaborate with other practitioners. We are by no means competitive. It's a really small community, yet like we are 100% involved in our brands. And what happens is when things like this happen, people turn to us and say, what do we say? Mm-hmm. What do I say about this? Mm-hmm. And you are unfortunately often in a place where you're the token. It's like, I cannot alone represent all Black people. I'm one Black person, just the same way you can, as a white leader, cannot blame the experience of all white people, nor you would be bewildered if I did. And so there's that component.
So like they've definitely been involved. So DE&I
have. Oh, yes. Yes. Right? Yes. So they have absolutely been involved, but oftentimes not the way they want to be involved. And it's like, okay, all right. I've been telling y'all for the last 5 years that this stuff was going on. I have been yelling from the top of my lungs. I put it in spreadsheets. I put it in decks. I put it in Venn diagrams. I put it in charts to say that, like, there are people at our company who are oppressed. And right. They're coming to work with these experiences, and they cannot leave them out the door. Right. And now, all of a sudden, they're stuck at home. Can't go anywhere, and you can see all these videos, so it's in your face, and all the other people who are in your position are saying something about it. Now y'all want to say something about it, and now you're asking me to tell you what to say. Okay, so there's that element of like, where have you been? And then all of a sudden it's anytime a business, anyone gets a large sum of investment. Like, let's say you're used to getting donations of $10,000, $50,000, and all of a sudden you're getting a donation of $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have the systems in place to spend that money or to allocate those resources. So all of a sudden we are getting an influx of appreciation, if you will, an influx of, we want your business, we want your work. And we have been chugging along in this bootstrap, very little investment way of building relationships and doing facilitations and one inch at a time. And now we're being asked to supersede our industry. And it's hard because A, we've been asking for this the entire time, and B, it's really great to see. So it's that balance of, okay, the attention is on us. This is our moment. We've been waiting to innovate. Yet I've been stuck in my own company doing all this like day-to-day stuff that is barely moving the needle. And I haven't even had like the brain space to innovate or the team to innovate. So we have started a group where studios can just get together and just talk about things that they maybe couldn't talk about in their own companies around like what we should be doing.
Yeah.
What would we do if we weren't in the confines of our own company? Mm-hmm. And let's, in our spare time, do that, like actually do that stuff now that we are given the encouragement to innovate.
Interesting. The plot has thickened, for sure. I want to wrap up by discussing how organizations can reshape this narrative. Like, what are your 3 to 5 action steps you would advise they take today? Well, besides calling you, of course, what can they do?
I'll say my don't do's first. Do not try to hire a facilitation group to do an unconscious bias training, because it will not work. That business is probably super busy. They don't have time to do training. It's emotionally draining as it is. And yeah, that's a waste of your money. We don't mind taking your money and doing an unconscious bias training, but let's not. Now on to the 2 days. One, you have to take an inventory of your entire sourcing, interview, hiring, promotion, talent development, employee life cycle, and have it audited to understand all of the points where bias is coming up. Not if, where, because it's happening. And let's not try to a lot of people want to do like blind resumes. It's like, let's not hide bias from ourselves. Let's address it. Let's see what it is. Let's catch it and move through it so that we can really get out on the other side and not be afraid of working with people who are different than us, instead embracing people who are different than us and getting into those sticky situations where you're not comfortable. So doing a complete audit of a system like that is really important, and hiring consultants to do that is also really important. I think before, and I'm ultimately going to say like the fifth thing should be hire more Black people in your senior leadership. We have a lot of companies I work with where they pride themselves on how many women they have in leadership. And the first thing I say instead of good for you is tell me about the impact those women have had. What is the positive impact they have had? Now imagine a next level of impact if those people are of color, if they are Black, if they're a Black woman. Imagine the amount of impact they could have on your business. And that really helps people open their perspective, like, oh shoot, okay, I may not know any Black people, I may not have a network full of Black people, but that is the ultimate goal. And then in between that, it is hiring someone to help you do the work of raising your awareness around race issues, around equity issues. You have to spend you have no experience. Well, it's not that you have no experience. You have limited experience in this, and you have to be able to spend the time to become literate to the point where you are comfortable saying the wrong thing. Because if you always say the wrong thing, you have to be comfortable making mistakes. And you can only do that if you know that you're behind the scenes and you're doing the work. So it's 3 things. One, do an audit of the entire employee life cycle. 2, it is allocate the time for leaders to wrap their heads around where they play a part in the perpetuation of racism, not how and if, it's when and where. And then 3rd, hire more people who are different than you, especially Black people, in leadership so that they can have the impact that you really do want to see, that you maybe don't know you want to see.
Right. Because ultimately, diversity leads to innovation, right? Like, why is that such a radical statement? Because I feel like we know this. That's why DE&I exists, but we still are walking around in these invisible handcuffs as it becomes to the things that we know are in the room, which is bias, which is all of the things that are born from being in a country that prioritizes white supremacy or was founded on white supremacy, right? Does that make
right.
sense?
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, this was amazing. Mandy, thank you for the education and the wonderful conversation. Tell everyone where to follow your work.
Yeah, I am fairly active on LinkedIn. You can find me at Mandy Bynum on LinkedIn, at Mandy Bynum on Instagram if you want to catch pictures of my dog and children. And you can check me out on my website, mandybynum.com.
Well, go follow Mandy right now so you can stay up on what you need to do. And if you need to go ahead and hire her in the now, thanks so much for joining us today, friends. Until next time.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. My hope is that you always consider me a resource for spiritual wisdom and all things soul level. Allow me to offer you some action steps that you can take right now to either start or deepen your own spiritual connection. Connect me to a friend or coworker or relative of yours that needs to hear this episode now. Send it over to them even if you've already told them all about how intuitive guidance can help and they haven't made their move yet. You can follow me at _lifeofanempath_ on Instagram, and then send me a DM so that we can schedule some phone time for you ASAP so you can start a deeper journey for yourself. Or reach out to me and let me know you want to start the process of supporting the journey of another that wouldn't have access otherwise. You can schedule your initial consult by going to my website at lifeofanempath.com. Email me at Tanisha@lifeofanempath.com and let me know that you'd love for me to share insights like you've heard on the podcast at your organization, or you would like to explore the possibilities of scheduling ongoing group facilitated emotional clarity or declutter the mind sessions for your team as we move forward toward alignment as a global community. I can't wait to connect with you.